Hey everyone, I'm Dan Kortler, the host of TED Climate. Each episode, we unpack the problems and solutions of climate change. This season of the show, we're getting into some big ideas that make us optimistic about the future, like meat grown from cells and leather made from mushrooms. And the best part? We look at how building a greener future can be an upgrade instead of a sacrifice. Find and follow TED Climate wherever you're listening to this.
This is a CBC podcast.
Okay, here's a question for you.
Do you ever feel anxious watching news coverage of climate change?
That's a question a pair of high schoolers recently asked their classmates. The answers?
Only all the time, every time it's mentioned.
There are times when I see news about climate change, and I think to myself, like, holy dying, what are we doing to ourselves?
Yeah, sometimes it gets, like, overwhelming because you think that everything is fine, but then you see that in other parts of the world, the situation is awful.
Not surprisingly, there's a lot of anxiety. We're going to hear from the New Brunswick students who did those interviews and made a video that tells young people it's okay to have those feelings and that they're not alone.
I was surprised to hear people being so open about it because I know that in my experience, I've felt almost embarrassed by being so stressed out about the news.
I'm Laura Lynch, and this is What on Earth, where we bring you a world of climate solutions. Today, solutions to the stress and anxiety so many of us feel about our warming world. Later on, we'll hear from our mental health columnist, Abhay Singh Satchel. He's training to be a psychologist so he can help young people cope with all of those emotions. But in his classes so far, he's noticed something lacking.
The issue with this new generation of psychologists and mental health workers not learning about climate change explicitly in education is that they won't even know to ask clients about these questions, to talk to people about these important topics. And I think it's actually a very big missed opportunity.
But first, let's hear more from those New Brunswick high school students.
My name is Maya Simpson. I'm 17 years old. I live in Hampton, New Brunswick, and I have forever, pretty much.
Okay, Amy?
My name is Amy McKenzie. I'm 18 years old, and I live in Hampton, New Brunswick as well.
Maya Simpson and Amy McKenzie, welcome to What on Earth?
Thanks for having us.
Amy, the two of you, you co-produced this video about climate anxiety, which we just heard a little bit of, and it's an episode of a regular series called Mental Health Mondays produced by Hampton High School students over the past few years. I know that some of the previous episodes have been about things like grief and guilt. Why did you decide to focus on climate anxiety for this one?
Well, I know that this would resonate more well with Maya because she has some personal situations and dealing with climate anxiety. But I do know that it's something that people are feeling and just afraid to speak up about it. As Maya said, it can seem a little bit embarrassing, which it is not at all. But I think we really want to bring awareness about it and make sure everyone feels that they can talk about it and that it's okay to feel anxious about these type of things because it is real and it is happening.
Yeah, and Maya, you have struggled with climate anxiety yourself, so tell me about that.
So in grade 9 and 10, I participated a lot in climate action activities. I was on the climate action team, the greenhouse team. I was in environmental science, and I loved it. I really did. But every time I saw the news, I was hearing about it at school in environmental science, hearing about it at climate action team meetings, and then hearing about it at home, I became so stressed out that I really couldn't watch the news anymore. I kind of shut down every time. I became overwhelmed with the media. So I feel like this year I've kind of grown out of, not necessarily grown out of climate anxiety, but I've grown out of being stressed about telling people that I experience climate anxiety. And I wanted to let others know that they're not alone if they feel stressed out watching the news.
Wow, this is great that you guys are doing this. You can see the need. Amy, tell us a bit more about the video. What have you included in it that you hope might help students who are struggling?
So we first kind of start out, and not to spoil it too much, but we started out with some news clips that just kind of are shown like negative about like climate change and stuff. And just those are the type of videos that we see and we feel very like anxious about. And then it kind of goes into some definitions about climate anxiety, et cetera, just to show people like what it means and that they might be feeling those ways. And then we kind of go into like coping strategies and ways to deal with it, because a lot of people don't really know how to deal with these feelings because it's such a big thing that, like, you can't tackle it on your own. So we kind of show them how they can cope with that. And then we wanted to really bring in some light and some positive news. So we include some positive news about climate change, just so people feel a little bit hopeful and can go back into climate action and feel that they're making a difference.
That sounds a lot like our show. Can you give me an example of sort of the positive things that you share to have that moment of lightness?
Yeah, of course. Well, one thing that's kind of new is that we hear that the ozone layer is healing, which is really positive for climate change and the Earth. So we kind of share that and just let people know that, you know, things are in the works and there's people working hard to make climate change, you know, less bad for our Earth. So stuff like that.
Now, you interviewed a former teacher at your school, Laura Myers, and she was very involved in the school's climate action team. I just want everyone to hear some of the advice that she offers.
For me, I like being out in nature. I like being out on the water, going for walks, listening to good music, reading good books. So these are things that I do to cope with anxiety in general and make me feel better about life. I really do try to focus on good news. On social media, I try to post things that are positive, and I'm hoping that makes a difference for someone's life. I know it helps me.
So, Maya, what has helped you when it comes to combating climate anxiety?
Personally, I definitely had to give myself some distance from those very dramatic and sensationalized news sources when I was in the deep of my climate anxiety. I haven't been able to get super back into the climate action team, but when planning other events in the school, which I do pretty often, I always try to find a way to incorporate climate action into what I do. And if I do come across a news source, then I'll do my research, but I won't push too hard to fix a problem that I know is not something I can fix just on my own.
Well, then I'm curious, how has the video helped? Has it helped making this video?
I think it has. It's definitely brought back some feelings of stress around the news, but it hasn't been too overwhelming because we're really balancing out the negative news with positive news and trying to talk more about coping mechanisms than all of the issues with climate anxiety, really trying to balance it out.
Okay, Amy, I'm wondering what kind of things are you hoping to hear from your classmates after they see the video?
I'm not saying we're going to take their anxiety away or anything like that, but I definitely want people to feel that it's okay to be having those feelings and there are ways to deal with that. And climate action is definitely a big coping mechanism that they can use. Hopefully people will just be feeling inspired after.
I just want to express that not everybody in our school may necessarily experience stress watching the news, but I think as long as we're educating the people who don't necessarily see climate change as an issue and don't really think about climate action in their day-to-day, because I feel like if we really surveyed the entire school, there would probably only be 50% that say that they knowingly experience climate anxiety. So that other 50%, I think the goal is just to make sure that they know what others in the school are going through.
That's really smart. Yeah, I was just wondering, can you give me an example of what the coping mechanisms are that you suggest for them?
Our biggest coping mechanism that we suggest is climate action. For a lot of people, this will make them feel like they're doing more to combat the climate crisis, and it usually works. We will be talking about that more severe climate anxiety where you might need to step away, and the healthy, positive mindset of knowing that I can do all that I can do, but not just me can fix the climate crisis.
Yeah. We want to focus on what we can control, and that's essentially the message that we're putting out. Because if everyone focuses on what they can control, then together we can make a difference.
Very wise. I just want to ask you both something. I mean, I think that the fact that you've taken it upon yourselves to produce the video so that you guys are all talking to each other about this, it makes me wonder, Amy, how well do you think adults understand the anxiety that a lot of young people are feeling about climate change right now?
I mean, to be honest, like, I've definitely had a few conversations with older people where it's just like, oh, like, we don't have to worry about that, or they just kind of shut it down and just kind of make it feel like minimalized and not as a big of a deal as it should be. And I think that definitely is a reason why some kids feel that their anxiety is not valid towards climate. So I feel like
that must be frustrating.
Yes, it can be very frustrating because it is such a real thing. And I feel like kids especially are the ones that are seeing this as it's going to be like our future, basically.
And Maya?
I think that the generation above us is definitely kind of, I feel bad to say this, but maybe stuck in their ways of respecting people older than you. And I think we need to accept that new information is coming out and the younger generation is doing their research and they're catching up pretty quickly to the knowledge that we know about the climate crisis. So I do feel like youth is kind of ignored often, but I think we're getting better. And I think that we could definitely improve it in coming years with this generation going into university.
Go ahead.
That's why I really appreciate Laura Myers, is because she always takes in like students' opinions and views, and it's more people like that that need to be out in the world that look at students and take them seriously.
Maybe you guys need to screen the video for the adults. I'm actually not kidding. Might not be a bad
Surprisingly,
idea.
Surprisingly, over this year, with our previous Mental Health Mondays episodes, we've gotten such good feedback from the staff. I feel like we've already definitely educated some of the adults in our building, so I'm excited to see how they take this episode in.
That is going to be really interesting. I hope I can hear back from you guys again on that, but congratulations and thank you so much.
Thank you for thank having you. Us.
And you can watch Maya and Amy's video about climate anxiety. Just search for Hampton High School on YouTube.
My name is Rudy Kelly, and I am an Aboriginal.
I am Chief.
My dad was a great chief of the Tsimshian Nation, beloved by his people. But at home, with his family, he brought anger and pain. He told me that to succeed, I would have to leave everything behind. Now I'm on a journey to find out who and what my dad really was. The Aboriginal is an all-new CBC podcast. Available now.
Students like Maya and Amy, who are taking it upon themselves to teach other young people how to cope with climate anxiety, that is the kind of thing my next guest loves to hear about.
That makes me really excited. I think that's incredibly powerful, and I think it speaks to the power that communities have directly in their own corners, and being able to access that, I think, is really, 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 really exciting. And local level community action to mitigate or adapt to climate change, like, that's really what we need more of.
That's What Unearths mental health columnist Abhay Singh Satchel. He's the founder and executive director of Break the Divide. It's a nonprofit that connects young people to talk about climate change and mental health. He's also just wrapping up the first year of his Master of Psychology program at the University of Regina. Abhay, I hear you've just finished with your classes for your second semester. Congratulations. How does it feel to be done?
Oh, it feels really nice to be done. Just having the chance to actually relax for the first time in a while. I know I'll fill up that time with other work-related things, but I'm excited to have that time to relax.
I bet. I remember what that felt like. Abhay, welcome back to What on Earth.
Yeah, great to be here, Laura.
You've noticed something when it comes to how climate emotions are addressed in your courses. Can you tell me about that?
Well, Laura, we talk about climate emotions a lot on this show. I know across Canada, more and more people are talking about climate change and mental health because it's so clear that climate change has an impact on the way that we feel. But in my master's program, focused on learning about mental health, learning about different pathologies, different conditions, the environment, let alone eco-anxiety, has not come up a single time in any of my courses.
Is that something that your classmates have noticed as well?
I'm not particularly sure. I think it's something that I, as one of the youngest people in the program, definitely think I recognize the most. This is something that I care about, I work on, I feel personally. And so I think I notice it the most. And it's not just the fact that eco-anxiety isn't mentioned, but our entire approach of looking at psychology is so disconnected from not even just nature, but the environments
that we live in.
Okay. Now, we have spoken with you in the past about your view that, the field of psychology isn't keeping up with the way people's mental health is affected by climate change. I'm wondering how, though, this year at school has opened your eyes to why that is.
I think what I've noticed, it's the stigma that comes around many of these mental health issues is often what causes the most impairments for a lot of different people. And I feel like that isn't often talked about. That's not recognized. And so if stigma is actually one of the core culprits, then we should be looking at ways to reduce stigma societally. And I think the mental health profession, I think psychologists, therapists actually have a critical role to play there. But instead, one of the things I have noticed is that as a psychologist, someone working in mental health, you're not actually trained to work with community, to connect with communities. And so the way that this relates to eco-anxiety is just that as communities of young people form identity, form shared language around eco-anxiety and all the different climate emotions. I mean, we see young people understanding their climate emotions better and better every single day, and we see amazing examples of that. But I don't think we're seeing the mental health profession reach out to communities and find the ways that people are actually feeling. Instead, I wonder if naming eco-anxiety feels like that's enough.
Just naming it and not thinking anything more about it. Okay, well, let's take that a little bit further. What problems does it raise if psychologists aren't being taught or those who are being trained now aren't being taught about the impact of climate change on mental health?
Yeah, I think the issue with this new generation of psychologists and mental health workers not learning about climate change explicitly in education is that they won't even know to ask clients about these questions, to talk to people about these important topics. And I think it's actually a very big missed opportunity to not use this skill set, this gift of being able to understand how to communicate with people, how to get people to open up, how to support healing. If people that are supposed to be people that help with healing are not actually able to talk about one of the biggest problems that we face in the world, then what are we doing?
All right. So you've made it clear that within the context of your education, they're not talking about it. But what do you know about broader efforts to train psychologists to be more climate aware?
I know that there's some really important projects out there that are talking explicitly about climate change and mental health. The Climate Psychology Alliance, for example, is an alliance of psychologists, therapists, mental health workers from across North America. And one of their big goals has been to increase the access to climate-aware therapy. And climate-aware therapy is a way in which people can access therapists that won't dismiss or downplay their concerns about climate change. Oftentimes, I hear from other young people that, like, they don't even know to bring up climate change with a therapist because they don't know if it's appropriate. Or that when they do, they're often gaslit. They're dismissed. It's like their therapists sometimes expect them to immediately solve the problem. And so in the context of climate change, much like certain other mental health conditions, I'll say, that's not actually what's helpful. It's not helpful to just talk about solutions immediately. And so the Climate Psychology Alliance, for example, I know that they have a really big emphasis on training therapists how not to over-pathologize and how to bring up these conversations in a way that honor the emotions that people are actually feeling.
Now, we also heard from the Canadian Counseling and Psychotherapy Association. It actually has a climate-informed counseling group, and it holds workshops like working with youth as a climate-informed counselor. Does that sound to you like things are changing?
I think that's an interesting question. And I've been thinking a lot, Laura, about my own role within change, too. I think the work that the Climate Psychology Alliance, for example, is doing, I think it's incredibly helpful. And I think it is going to create a new generation of mental health workers that are trained to work with clients on these issues. But I don't know if it's good enough to scale for how big the climate crisis is. I know one model that I've seen that's incredibly successful that the Climate Psychology Alliance has actually piloted is climate cafes. So very open circles where anyone can be trained to run these groups where anyone can talk about their climate emotions in an open space. I think that sort of community-led approach where you're reaching people where they're at, you're not someone with a degree and expertise that you're training to them, but you're sort of in a shared circle where anyone can learn from one another. I think that's the future. But beyond that, perhaps rethinking what we value and the ways in which we think of climate change and this issue of climate emotions and how we adapt to it more broadly.
Now, I know that you you already said that you're just looking forward to having a little downtime now that you've wrapped up the second semester. But after you take the little break there, where are you going to focus your efforts over the next couple of months?
Yeah, well, at Break the Divide, we've been piloting some really exciting work as school has been going on. And as much as I will be taking a bit of a break, I will also dive headfirst into some of this work. We're actually launching our Climate Skills and Community Building Fellowship. This is a program based in downtown Toronto to work with international students and newcomer youth to have them engaged in conversations around climate emotions, mental health, community, identity, culture. And so these are in-person study circles and training workshops in downtown Toronto. So if anyone listening out there knows any international students or newcomer youth, or if you just want to learn more about the program and how you can volunteer, check out our website, breakthedivide.net, or feel free to reach out to me to learn more. So I'm really excited about that program.
So on the one hand, Abby, you're seeing that at the institutional, professional, educational level, climate isn't always on the radar. On the other hand, you're involved in these youth-led initiatives. So are young people having to take matters into their own hands when it comes to climate and mental health?
I think our language around how we perceive young people absolutely reflects that. We constantly see young people as leaders, as people who are going to save the world. How the burden is on the shoulders of young people. And so I think young people are stepping up to this challenge because we have to. And so I think, again, like there is change to be pushed within institutions. And I do believe in that power. I do believe that some of our institutions, like our mental health care systems, can improve. But at the same time, I'm really excited and happy that young people are creating solutions for ourselves that can then scale to the entire population.
Abby Singh Satchel, thank you. Until next time.
Yeah, thanks so much, Laura.
I think that both of those conversations just reinforce why we spend a good amount of time on What on Earth talking about young people and what they're facing with climate change, but also what they're doing about it, precisely because they're the ones who are going to have to live with the outcome of everything that's happening. I'm not a young person, so I'm always interested in what they have to say about the situation they're in and the resilience and smarts they have about how they're going to face up to it all. Now, recently on the show, we talked about the climate-friendly way to get rid of worn-out stuff made of fabric. You know, things like torn bedsheets, ratty bath towels, stained T-shirts, worn-out PJs. Here's what we heard.
I usually advise people that they should donate everything if it is dry, clean, and odorless.
That's Seneca Polytechnic Professor Sabine Weber. What on Earth's Rachel Sanders is here now with some of your response to that story. Hi, Rachel.
Hey, Laura. Yes, we heard from a few listeners on this one. Heidi Fisher offered some good advice for worn-out sheets and towels. She said any animal rescue organization such as the SPCA will gladly take clean towels, tea towels, and sheets with some life left in them. Did you know that, Laura?
No, and I should have been thinking about that because I often take things down to the SPCA charity shop near where I live so that they can use that to raise money. But this is actually a really good idea and I'm going to follow up on that.
Yes, I knew they take towels. I've often dropped off old towels at our local SPCA. I think they use them for like bedding in the cages. I didn't know some of them took sheets and tea towels, though. I would say it's a good idea to call ahead and see if your local SPCA wants any old linens before you drop them off. But Heidi also suggests another good use for old sheets and towels. She says cut them up and use for cleaning cloths instead of a disposable paper product. Save money and keep fabric out of the landfill.
And that is definitely something my mother used to do. And I've done that sometimes, but not consistently. So this is a good reminder for me to do exactly that because actually it works quite well.
It does. Old pieces of worn out towel are my favorite kind of cleaning rags. They're so absorbent.
You sound very excited,
I know.
Rachel.
I love it. Reusing old stuff for new stuff.
I get it. We also got an email from 77-year-old Layla Ward in Vernon, BC. She wrote, as a kid, on a dull winter day in Winnipeg, I and my parents and siblings went to a big factory. We had a load of old clothes and linens, which we traded by weight for blankets made from recycled items. We got scratchy green blankets that we used year after year. My high school knew how poor we were. I was asked to babysit for several of my teachers. My geography teacher's wife gave me several summer dresses. I might have kept one, and the rest were cut apart, and I had bedsheets made of many colors and patterns on the fabric, kind of like Dolly Parton's coat of many colors.
I've never heard of patchwork sheets before.
No, but
that's
why
so interesting.
Not?
Yeah, yeah. We also heard from Nancy Trigano in Nova Scotia. She told us that province is working to divert fabric waste from the landfill. And some counties in that province actually do curbside pickup of old clothes and linens. You can put them in your recycling bin. She said in Colchester County, textiles go with recycled paper.
Wow, that is a great idea. I wish there were more places doing things like that. And there are a few places in Canada that are starting to ban fabric from landfills.
That's right, yeah, and that is certainly part of the solution to textile waste. And Laura, there's one other message we got. Marion May in Ottawa sent us photos of soft toys she's made out of things like old PJs, socks, and pantyhose. Marion says she's made more than 40 toys out of worn-out fabric stuff, including the Rose family from Schitt's Creek. Have a look at these.
Okay, let me see. Wow! Those are actually really, really good. And it's hard to believe that's all made of worn out fabric.
They look like them, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, she's found a thing to do with this. This is quite something. That story that you did about old worn out fabric, it was inspired by a listener question. Mm-hmm. We love to help you out with your climate dilemmas, right, Rachel?
We do, yes. We have a lot of fun with
Yeah,
that.
We do. We actually do. And we all sit around and trade stories and we go, wow, I didn't know that. So it's something we really like to do. So whether you want to weigh the cost of a heat pump or fix a flimsy appliance without tossing it in the landfill, Rachel, that is another one that you've helped us out with in the past.
That was fun.
And in fact, Marion, who we just referenced, who does all the dolls, including the Rose family from Schitt's Creek, she inspired another question that we're working on answering right now. And it is it better to wash your dishes by hand or use a dishwasher? I know a couple who have argued over this for years. And by the end of the explanation for this, one of them will win and one of them will lose the argument. So stay tuned. You'll want to listen for that. If you've got a question you'd like us to answer, you can email us anytime, earth@cbc.ca. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you, Laura.
Remember, you can listen to all of our episodes on demand at CBC Listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We drop 2 new podcasts every week. While you're there, leave us a review because we love to read them. Or you can share an episode with a friend. That's great, too. That is all for us. The What on Earth team is Andy Mullins, Vivian Luck, Rachel Sanders, Molly Siegel, Matthias Wolfson, and Catherine Rolfson. Special thanks to Fabiola Carletti and Missy Johnson. I'm Laura Lynch. Thank you for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.